Now we stop now with Weizmann and go to another question altogether.
But when I met, now you switched on?
No, I switched. So.
When I met Ben-Gurion in America, nothing in Weizmann said to me modified my impression of him. Such as it was direct. Weizmann's dislike for him didn't make me dislike him in any way.
You mean he thought you won or later?
At any time after I met him for the first time. I mean, he made such... I saw what you would like. Or at least I thought I saw what you would like. Quite independently of what was said about him.
But then, in the 50s, when you came, after Weizmann died, when did you first go and see Ben-Gurion?
Oh, when I was staying with Weizmann. Certainly. Oh, yes. Yes, in 50.
Ah.
You see?
It was your initiative? It was...
I don't know. No, it wasn't my initiative. No, it was his. He asked me to come. And I went to see him in Tel Aviv. And then Weizmann said, tell him we've got to hit the Arabs on the head. We can't let this go on. Whatever this then was. And I said to him, Ben-Gurion, the president, wishes me to inform you. He said, yes, I know he's being very militant. He said, very militant, Russian. Being very militant indeed. I noticed being militant, very ironically.
Why did
you invite him? To talk, to ask about England, to ask what the mood in England was and what the politicians, what the Labour government was saying, partly that, and partly to offer me a job. Not a specific kind. He said, you see, when he was very, for some reason, impressed by me, when he heard that I was in Israel, he said, Lizgorot Agvulot. That I remember. Which flattered me.
A man like Ben-Gurion, it's possible that, I mean, his admiration for Churchill was
total.
And had he known, and probably knew, that Churchill was impressed by your report and so on and so forth.
Maybe.
Because it's true that Ben-Gurion in this period tried to attack Anshei Ruach. And Oxford was for him. I mean, that could be one reason, and the other reason could be Churchill.
But look, I was wrong before. I had talked at the diplomatic school in 47, you're right. Yes, you're right. I made a separate journey, or 48, or something like not 48.
What about the 47?
I went with Richard Kahn, now Lord Kahn. He is an economist at King's, was Keynes's pupil. We went together and we both talked. Kahn was in Cairo during the war. He was not at all Zionist. He was not Zionist, but he turned Zionist because of anti-Semitism among the English in Cairo. The usual story.
I mean, I read a lot about many papers of him in Cairo. I mean, the brain trust that they had in Cairo, in the Middle East Supply Center, is really incredible.
The what?
I mean, the accumulation of brains.
Of talent, yes.
Incredible. I mean, there were three future Nobel Prize in economy. Can't remember who except Kahn. And, I mean, the best men in England were there.
Anyway, he was there and he was... very suspect, he talked to Charette. When Charette came and he was accused of having a relation with Zionists, he was very offended. That threw him to the opposite camp.
And he came in 47?
Was it for Zionists? I wish I could remember. We both went entirely and had the invitation. I'll tell you who was the head of that school then. He was a member of the, of course, of Mapai. And he became probably something in the Jewish agency or something like that, if you can remember, who were the sort of...
It was not a son?
No.
So it might be 49?
50? Yes, so who was that in 50? Who was the head of it in 50?
I'm sorry.
I remember what you looked like.
Yeah,
He was a Romanian Jew, or a Polish Jew, something like that.
Could it be Levati?
No.
Yuval?
No. Doesn't matter. I remember I talked about England, I talked about America. That was all right. I talked about the Soviet Union making awful mistakes. That was thought to be no good at all. The whole criticism of the Soviet Union was rejected by these people.
So it can't be true. In 50, only minority remained under maybe it was not the foreign office.
It was.
Not the army?
Could be the army.
I
wish I could. No, maybe it was officers. But who was the head of that?
Now, the head of 1350 was Lasko. Pelt?
Who?
Pelt.
No.
Sorry,
not Lasko.
And it was not in a tent.
No. It was in Herzliya. No, Netanya. Netanya. This is the army. It wasn't Netanya.
I find out.
Anyway.
And it rings a bell because by then in 50 I already knew and I think I
heard. But Teddy Kolek said they thought your first two talks quite good. The other talk on the Soviet Union was thought no good at all.
But 50 was already
on by Soviet. No, that's why he didn't say it critically. He just reported.
Now, by then you were already friends with Teddy?
Yes. I met Teddy in 47. In Israel. In Palestine.
Now, later on, whenever you would come to Israel, he would bring you to Ben-Gurion.
That's probably true.
Yes,
that's probably true. That's probably true. That's probably true.
He's so sweet.
Yes. Ben-Gurion liked talking to me, quite liked discussing. Father was the amusing visitor ever. He used to talk about things in general. He used to talk about history, about the importance, nationalism, how nations are created. He liked, and of course I saw him in Oxford, as you know.
Later?
Yes, when he came, no longer Prime Minister. I think I was here. He came to Oxford for a weekend, because Crossman told him to buy books in Blackwell's.
He came three times. Once in 1960. And then in
1661. Must be 1950. Yes, I'll tell you.
That was his first visit and he bought plenty of books.
I'll tell you what happened. He was staying in the Mitre Hotel. And I was told that he was there. And of course I knew him by then. Evidently. So I went to see him and I found him warming his feet in front of a fire. Some sort of squalid little drawing room there. And I took him with me to New College. And talked to him. Then I took him for a walk around Oxford at about 11 o'clock at night. Then I took him to All Souls, where there was only one man sitting in the common room. That was a man called Hubert Henderson, who was at that time, a professor of economics, who became later warden. And he had a long argument. Henderson knew no idea who he was. Asked him the next day, who is that intelligent little man? And that went until 1 in the morning. Then I took him back. And Balog asked me to introduce me to him too, but I don't think I did. Then I saw him again the next day. He had some bodyguards with him. And that you see, I can't quite remember who they were. Probably, what's his name? What? Nehemiah must have been there. Nehemiah was. The one who committed suicide. He was there, yes. He was a legal. I think he was there, Nehemia. Exactly. But they were never there when I was with you today to leave the room. I do. And we had long conversation about this and that. We used to go for walks, I said, quite a lot then. Then he left. Then when he came again, he came to lunch. We asked Dolly Rothschild. Probably.
He was in 1961. In 61, he came back from his visits with Adenauer. In 60, I can't remember what was the
time. Anyway, he came to Oxford. He stayed near Oxford.
Near Oxford. In a hotel.
Correct.
It is a country, a small country.
Exactly.
Any candidates have not won, and anybody comes for it. There was a problem of security.
All that. And he came to lunch with Dolly Rothschild, Ali, and me, and Paul. I think that is all right. It's quite nice.
And
Dorothy, he called her. Dorothy.
He was demented, I mean, in his
peak. Absolutely.
Now, but I mean, was it interesting to ask him?
Always. I remember telling him something made an impression, rather unfortunately, made an impression on him. I said to him that the French reactionary political philosopher de Maistre said that it is absurd to think that people crave for peace. They crave for war, they crave for fighting, they crave for violence. It's if you watch human beings, it's ridiculous to suppose that peace is one of the ends of man. And that in fact, states as often not are made by conquest. And I said to him, you know, America, and what did I quote to him? Something of those lines. And that America was really made into a proper nation by the Civil War, which made for them a real American history. Before 1860, there was no, they didn't think about themselves historically. After that, they did. And he said, yes, yes, it's a shedding of blood that makes nations. And that he believed in. Then, of course, I tell you about my story when I went to his Bible class. When he was living in Ben Maimon Street, Ben Maimon, outside the Bible class, he invited me to it. I went. I was staying with the King David, I suppose. I was probably doing Weizmann or something already. No, I mean, not quite, I mean, the interviews, probably.
Yes,
you know. Oh, not, I don't know. I was on some job. And Paula met me and said, the first visit, I remember very well, in Tel Aviv, she said, what would you like to drink? And Ben-Gurion said, give him some orange juice. I said, why Dafke orange juice? I quite difficult to get. Ordinary water is quite enough. Gave me a glass of water. I loved it. Then we came, and there was this class. There was Shazar, and one of these judges of the Supreme Court.
Zilberg,
certainly. The other, I'm not sure. And there was Kaufmann. Yes. And various other people. Kind of shiur around the table. And Paula said, look, it's very boring what they're doing. Ben-Gurion doesn't enjoy it in the least. He pretends he does. He thinks he should. Why don't you come and talk to me? Why be a hypocrite? You'd find it much more amusing to talk to me in the corner. It's terribly boring.
I never thought of it, but it's very
difficult. Very, I know. So I rejected this advance, and I sat down, and they talked about the prophet Natan Hanavi. And the problem was, what was the prophet? Natan who talked to Melach David, Ata'aish. What was the position of prophets? Were they court prophets? Was it Navi HaChatzir? Or were they dervishes? I mean, exactly what the position of prophet was in the kingdom of Israel. Quite interesting. They talk about him, Eliyahu, Elisha, and all this.
Could you follow?
Oh, yes. I followed. In some way. Then, somebody mentioned the fact, then Ata'aish came up. And they said, well, of course, it's well known that David couldn't build the temple because he was a man of blood. That's why Solomon, who did not shed blood. At this point, Ben-Gurion simply lost his temper, blew up, and said his monstrous interpretation. Whatever the Bible may say, David was the greatest king we had. Everything he did was perfect. And I swear he identified himself with David in every possible way. You see, and defended David against all these monstrous years. What? I know. You see? And I saw that he had to do it. The, after that, the class broke up. But I was amused. There's passion defense. Shall we stop? Right.
You want us to stop?
5 o'clock, yes.